Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. Welcome to my loyal fans. Thank you guys every week for being back here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for engaging. Thank you for being part of the audience. Every week, we try to get a different great guest on the show to talk about what's their story. Who are they? What do they do? Why do they do it? Who do they do it for? And why people should care. It's about how do we add value? And this week, my good friend Andrew Deutsch is going to be joining me from FangleTech. Andrew has been in the marketing game longer than a lot of my guests have been alive. And he has learned, relearned, has more experiences, been down more holes and found his way out of them than the majority of people out there. And we always have great conversations. We always laugh. We always trade barbs and sit there going, hey, do you remember this? And I love having the conversation with him. So Andrew, welcome to the show.
So basically introducing me, I'm the old guy.
You are. You're the old guy. You're one of me. You and I are the dinosaurs. We both have the gray hair. We got to embrace it. We're not 30 anymore. But look at the experience that we've had. Look at the things that we've learned along the way.
Absolutely. I got to thank you for having me on. I'm really honored to be asked. This is going to be fun.
Hey, you know what? I always enjoy our conversation. So I said, you know what? It was absolutely time to get it on the mic and be able to sit down and share your wisdom because I always love the stories you tell. Now, let's start off with a brief history. I mean, I know you're like me, going on forever on a history of who you are, what you do, why you do it. It gets monotonous at times, but let's start off. We at least need to let people know, where did you come from? Where are you today? And how did you get there? So we have at least a basis of understanding about the conversation we're going to have.
Sure. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and went to Southern Ohio for undergrad, ended up in Florida where I went to grad school. I studied initially international trade and then added a master's that was more based in psychology where I worked as a therapist for a period of time while I was building my consulting practice for global trade, where work took me further south. I ended up in Brazil where I lived for about 10 years and built my business there. And it was really about a market that had just opened. So prior to that, it was closed. Everything that was sold in Brazil was basically made there. None of the businesses there really understood global trade. So I went from being a young guy in the U.S. who was one of many, to an expert just by changing zip codes, or by changing languages, and really built a business where I helped American companies, North American companies, grow their businesses in South America. Came back to the States in 2003, continuing that business until the market crashed. And my biggest client at that time, who was in the plastic strapping industry, we had taken them from almost zero to about $1.2 million in South America, invited me to come on board. And I became an employee for the first time in, 15 years. And we grew that business. At that time, I ended up hitting the road and I was in average of 45 countries a year. I'd fly 300,000 air miles, never knew what time it was. And we grew a business from about 3.2 to 11.4 million, went from 12, 13 countries, I think it was, to 75 countries we were actively selling in until I decided that all that travel was killing me. I was weighing about 360, 365, couldn't walk up a flight of stairs, was exhausted and needed to make a change. So I dropped 160 pounds and changed my career and now work mostly in the domestic market, but always in the creative marketing and sales space. And that's what I've been doing ever since. FangleTech is about taking all of those years of global trade experience, marketing, sales, and all of the accomplishments that we did and helping our clients grow their businesses and convert every touch they have as a company into what we say is a voracious advocate for their brand.
I love it. Everybody looks and says, oh, 300,000 miles. It says 45 countries a year. That must have been really exciting. Trust me, from someone who's done it, it's not. It's romantic for the first month, maybe 3 months.
You know when you realize it's too much? When you wake up in the morning and you look around the hotel room and you have no idea, not what city, but what country you're in. And you pick up the book that's got all the hotel perks in it to realize where you are.
Yeah. I used to call the concierge.
Yeah. I've walked up to the desk speaking the wrong language. I'll tell you, I do know more airports, restaurants, and factory locations than most, but there's not much tourism and excitement that goes on when you're stuck over the weekend in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, talking about plastic strapping.
Yeah. People don't sit there and says, you're not there as a tourist. You go in, you fly in, you do what you need to do, and then you're back on a plane and you're heading somewhere else. And it's a completely different lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, when I was out 2-3 weeks at a time, certainly I would plan the trip so the weekend was somewhere interesting. So I got to see some pretty amazing stuff. But when you weigh it all out, that was a privilege. It doesn't outweigh the amount of just wear and tear on the old body and the mind, being away from family. And we talk about this Zoom thing. Everybody's all of a sudden video conferencing. I've been doing it for 20 plus years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I'd been smart, I would have bought stock in Zoom. It's funny. I've been using Zoom longer than I care to imagine. I always thought it was a great thing, but all of a sudden it went public and I think I missed the IPO or just didn't think about it. It's amazing how it's gone from this, you know, this hockey stick curve. And all of a sudden it has really changed how the majority of people connect with each other.
Spread quickly, kind of like a virus, huh? And in the early days when I would be like sitting in a hotel in Colombia before fax machines, waiting for the motorcycle kid to come from the telex office with a short message on yellow paper for me to respond to a client because the phone calls were so expensive. And you watch the evolution of that going through. I mean, I remember when the fax machine first became available in the international market, nothing could ever be better. And now you look at how we're able to communicate so easily with global calling plans and email and internet and Zoom. And it was the only way I could keep in touch with my family when I was on the road.
And that's an interesting conversation, is the evolution of communication, the evolution of marketing, the evolution of how do we communicate effectively with each other in order to build trust? Because that's what it's all about. It's being able to connect with each other. Too many people send an email or send a text or send a telex or whatever they send, and they assume it's understood. They understood it's going to be engaged with. They understood that, you know, people get it in the reference that you want it to be in, but it's just not true. You know, communication is not a two-way street.
We're learning that a lot of the things that in the business world that were always sort of a staple of who we are and what we did with the digital age and from marketing has changed. For example, the trade show. It used to be before we had the websites and the ease of communicating, what was a trade show? It was the moment where we got to see everybody so that we didn't have to travel so much and introduce something new. Now with YouTube and websites and webinars and all these kinds of things, we can be constantly launching new things as they're ready to launch and not sit on them until that annual trade show happens. Now with COVID, people are recognizing even more because all the trade shows were canceled. So now the reason people go to trade shows is that face-to-face networking or the ability to have a steak dinner on the company nickel.
Exactly. And get away from the family for a couple of days.
Yeah, unless there is something that you really do need to see, feel, and touch, the trade show is almost a thing of the past. Most trade shows in the industries that I've been in, for example, in the packaging industry, in the last years before this happened, you'd go to the trade show. For example, if you're in the packaging world, you go to a packaging show, who's there? Your competitors. So it becomes a question, hey, let's look around and see what the other guys are doing and posture and lie about our numbers to make them think we're bigger than we are and play the games of ego. But really, no business was happening at those shows. What we had discovered was if you're selling packaging materials, you go, well, who uses the packaging? Oh, the chemical guys. Well, then let's go to a chemical show. And that was sort of the evolution. Now, we can't go to the trade show. So let's show how the packaging works in video form and webinar and otherwise. And now any moment that we want to deal direct with somebody, we just show them the video, have them on a conference like this, and we can advance the process so far forward that the trade shows almost become nothing more than a social gathering.
And I'll get back to that. But the social gathering is important because we have become disconnected from each other as people. And I'm not just talking COVID. I'm talking for years now.
Let me demo. Hold on. Okay.
Exactly. For those who didn't see it, he just picked up his phone. But we've gotten to a point where we don't have two-way conversations. It's one-way dialogues. And then we wait for a response. And whether it's 5 minutes or 5 hours or 5 days or sometimes never, you wonder, did the person get my message? Did they understand my message? Did they relate to my message? What are they going to do with my message? How do we go back and forth? And video conferencing helps because it allows us to at least look people in the eye and be able to take a look at some body language, but you're still two-dimensional. You're still a two-dimensional figure on the other side of a screen. It's being able to reach out and have those quiet conversations. You know, I speak at conferences around the world, and the magic happens not when I'm on stage, but the quiet conversations that happen before and afterwards. It's people having a cup of coffee or talking, God, that speaker was great, or God, I learned this. What did you think about this? And that's where the magic of the trade show needs to be. You're right. Product, we're going to see 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, on demand, whatever you want, because you're right. We can create really good videos that talk about how the product helps you be better at your particular task. It solves your problem.
Let's build on that. Think about the last time that you gave an in-person presentation. So you went to a conference room, there's a bunch of people in the room, you put up your slides or you did your thing, you showed a video, you had the discussion. And that was a powerful thing. But more powerful than that was as the meeting broke up and Bob, who was in the meeting, who's actually the guy who makes decisions, comes over and says, hey, Ben, that was fantastic. And you get into that side conversation that builds the rapport and the confidence. And it's interesting because the generation right now who are leaving college, becoming members of sales teams, becoming members of business development teams, learning their basic marketing, what they're missing that we had was all of those times that we had to personally network, walking into a room of people we didn't know and going around from sort of cluster of folks by cluster, introducing ourselves without, hey, here's my brochure, here's my card, let's do business. It's let's get to know each other. And hey, what do you guys do? And tell me a little bit more. You know what? Maybe sometime we'll have to get together later and talk about this. I think there's something. They don't have any of that skill set because they're doing it here. And the other thing that's going on with this, that's some, it's wonderful, to me, it's odd, is all those little gotta minutes in the office where you can just go, hey, Bill, what do you know about this? And move on. They've all been broken down into 15, 30, and 45 minute increments on here. So you can't just say to someone, hey, can you hop on a call for 10 seconds? Because we've all got it blocked out on our calendars. And by the way the technology is set up, it's got to be a text. It's got to be, there isn't that personal bit where you can not just hear the information, but hear the tone and the level of commitment and all those other things that we can read into conversations.
Well, that's one thing that I teach people is if you're going to have a good size meeting, 10, 12, 15 people, that breakout session button in Zoom, and I'm sure that it's available in other technologies as well, is magic. Just say, you know what? I want to talk about this. I want you guys to break up into two or three people groups and be able to workshop this around, think about it, and then come back and let's talk about it as a big group. And that's powerful.
Yeah, there's another piece to it too that I'm wondering about, and I don't have any data to back this up. This is a supposition that I'd like to look into further. But we've been in conferences, network meetings, and while that meeting is going on, we've been enabled with something that we didn't used to have, the ability to have side conversations in the chat. And I think that it's extremely distracting for most people, but they don't realize it is. It's like texting while they're driving and everybody's, oh no, I'm fine when I do that. As they look up and they're touching the guardrail with the bumper of their car.
Or the car in front of them.
So how many times have people who are listening to this, and think about it, how many times have they been on a Zoom meeting with 30 people and there's a speaker talking about things that are critical. And at the same time, the chat window's going with five different people buzzing them saying, isn't this dumb? Or this guy doesn't get, and you know, being critical and otherwise in the private chat or direct chat. And then you realize, oh my God, I got to go back and listen to this meeting again because I didn't hear any of the program. I was noticing it in meetings in the last 10 years where people were doing that with their phones. In the meeting, people were texting each other. And now it's even easier because people can't even see you doing it. So are we really connecting and sharing information and what we need to know to be a team working together? Or are we encouraging side conversations and distractions?
Yeah, and those side conversations can be valuable if they are done in a productive way. But for the most part, they're not. I mean, here it is. I'm sitting here with two 24-inch monitors. If I'm watching a webinar, guarantee you my email is open. There might be a website open. Somebody might say something. I'll say, oh, wait a second, I got to check the YouTube on that. And all of a sudden, you're right. You've lost half the webinar. And it's time you either paid, whether it's money or where you've spent time or whatever. And the people on the other side have invested time and money and effort to be part of this thing, but they don't have your attention. And we need to learn not only how to get people's attention, but how to keep people's attention. And it's as much about people in the room as it is the presenter. The presenter needs to understand, and whether it's face-to-face marketing, whether it's Zoom marketing, whether it's marketing to the masses, whatever it is how do we communicate in such a way that we're relevant to the audience that we're trying to communicate with? They understand it and they value it. So I want to think, what are your thoughts on that? And where do you think we could go to be able to get back to a a place where people are actually paying attention and people are actually valuing each other in terms of the information that's being passed forward.
You know, our mutual friend Alan Zabert, who's brilliant. He has an interesting statement about his training. What he's really doing is he's teaching people how to hug each other when they're not in the room. And I don't know that necessarily in the business world, we're always wanting to hug. But at the same time, making things more personal without being invasive is part of sort of the relationship building between people. I mean, I don't need to know your deep inner secrets, but knowing and getting people to talk about themselves is a great way to endear yourself to them if you actually want to know about them.
Yeah, if you actually care. The key word is care.
And I'll give you a good example. So most men assume the other guy is a sports guy. So I get on a call with somebody and they almost always go, oh, from Cleveland, how about them Browns? I've never seen a game. It's not something I'm interested in. So if you really wanted to have that conversation, it should start with, are you a sports fan? Or do you like other things? Oh, you're into sports. You live in Cleveland. Do you watch the Browns?
No, actually, I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan. Oh, really? Why? And you had that conversation about why Montreal Canadiens if you live in Cleveland.
Montreal's in Canada? I had no idea.
It's amazing. Actually, it's not. It's in Quebec.
I thought it was in France. It's actually one of my favorite places. I love going up there. But anyhow, teaching the skills of actually engaging folks rather than placating folks. You start your conversation with, hey, dude, how's it going? And you don't care how it's going. So how do you teach people to really engage and get people talking about themselves? Because you're interested in knowing, not so much because, oh, next time I got to remember he's got a wife who had a birthday and so-and-so, but you've got a wife who's an artist. I'd be interested in knowing if that was the case, where does she show her work? Or you have a son who's in a band. Why? I'd love to hear what the music's like. Those kinds of things that build that sort of personal rapport, we don't teach very well how to do that anymore because even the next generation, they hardly even talk to each other on the phone. Their relationships are based on what they can type with their thumbs or what they're yelling at each other over a video game while they're blowing up the world or whatever it is. There's sort of a disconnect in terms of the social structure that existed before all this tech. I'm absolutely certain that if we master how to bring that back, we're going to be able to relate so much better and have such a better seat at the table with our clients. And also in how we build our marketing strategies to really understand who is that customer, what are their problems and challenges, and how do we solve them? Rather than, I've got a product and I think you need it.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. And you just mentioned that word tech, because our tech stacks in the marketing world and the sales world and everywhere else in the world are becoming more and more complex. They truly are. Everybody sits there and goes, oh, you have to have this piece of technology. You have to have this piece of technology. And you need to have this automation sequence. The big problem with automation sequences, whether they're chatbots, whether they're email servers, whether it's social media, whatever it is the people that design them. Because the people that design them are not thinking about human beings on the opposite end of the process. They're not thinking about how do we relate to people, you're right, in a caring and relevant and an emotional way. And I'm not talking about, you're right, reaching out and giving everybody a hug, but I'm talking about actually, you know, caring about the person on the other side. If you don't care about the other person on the other side, why should they care about you? Why should they even care about what you do or why you do it if you don't care about them, if you're not making this relevant to them, if you're not trying to sit there and say, okay, how do we make a connection between me and them or my company and their company or whatever it is? How do we expect them to want to do business with us and treat us in anything more than a commodity?
Let's take a step back. All of these tech things that we're talking about are tools. And none of them will work if you don't go back to the strategic part of who is the customer, what are their needs, what are they interested, all of the things that make up who that being is. And the other mistake people make is if you've only got one type of customer, it's because you don't know your customers. But like if you're going to implement something as complex as a CRM, first time I ever used a CRM, it was implemented by the IT guy. Never sold anything in his life, never marketed anything in his life. And he basically created an electronic babysitter that caused us to have to do a ton of work. And if I was an IT guy, I would have loved it. But as a sales guy, I just got another job. I now have two jobs. I've got my sales job and I've got my CRM job.
And the problem with that is that sales guys then sit there going, this is way too much work. They want me to say this. Fine, I'll say this. They want me to input this. Fine, I'll input this. Whatever it is the least path to existence, and garbage in, garbage out.
Yep. So when you're developing, and when we do Salesforce or Dynamic, which by the way, I'm agnostic as to which CRM because they all have their benefits. We first look at what are the challenges and what's the needs are, and then we pick a CRM rather than adapting. But when we do that, we're going to adapt tech for a customer. We start with the guys who are going to use it. And we look at what are their needs and challenges and how do we make this something that they're going to love and want to use. Then you take the next step back. The information that they gather, the marketing team needs, the operations team, how do we use that information without making the salespeople into members of that department too? And you build out from the core. You don't let the IT guys in the room until the integration part because they don't understand. And you don't let the engineers in while the sales team is building what the sales component is going to be because they think differently and they have different needs and wants. And by taking all of that, starting from the core, working your way out, you get a CRM so that a salesman walks out of a sales meeting and talk into his phone and do all of his notes in 3 minutes. And the data that he provides combined with all the data from sales proposals and all of that stuff combined on its own, that's where the automation happens, where people don't need to be. And when the marketing team looks at that, they can see the results of the campaigns and all that, and it builds out from there. It starts with that personal touch of understanding those people, not assuming who they are.
Yeah, it's understanding the needs both of your internal clients and your external clients. I mean, the big thing that keeps coming back in my mind is training, where whether it's marketing, whether it's sales, whether it's whatever, is training people, first of all, why they should use this tech. Second of all, how to use this tech. And third, how this tech is going to allow them to help their customers better.
Yep. And it's a what's in it for me analysis.
Absolutely.
Back before all this tech existed, we could have these conversations up front about who the customer is, what are their needs, and all this kind of stuff that we have to have now, but tend not to. So in the early days when we would go visit a client, those were the initial conversations. Most of the business that we do today ends up because some other person who doesn't understand the personal touch has burned that customer. For example, here's a pitch that I've heard repeated to me from other folks who have marketing agencies. We're so glad that we're here today. We looked at your website. So we think there's an SEO problem. We need to drive more people to your website. Matter of fact, we can rebuild that website, make it look beautiful for you. We know how to get 300,000 visitors to your website a month with no problem. And by the way, your employees have kind of lousy LinkedIn pages. We'll show them how to get 10,000, 20,000 followers additional every month. And we're going to get you a trade show. We're going to do some advertising. And they go through all of this tactical stuff they're going to do. And nobody ever goes, but wait a minute, you don't even know what our goals are. You don't know our customer. You don't know any of that stuff. But because the play sounds so good, oh my God, I heard these numbers, hundreds of thousands of followers and visitors, and they get excited and they go after all this tactical stuff when really they should have gone back and looked at their market placement, the branding down to the core. So until you build that strategic understanding, what are the goals of the company? Where do you want to be in the future? What do you represent? Who are you? All the things that make up that brand, all this tactical stuff is my expression always. It's like going hunting for mosquitoes with a shotgun.
Yeah, we rely too much on tech. We truly do. I mean, decisions are made through data analysis without actually having any context, without actually talking to the customer. We assume our customers are this because of the data. Okay, data can be interpreted 1,000 different ways. How good is the person that is interpreting the data understand the actual customers that you have, your business, and everything that goes along with it? When we're building technology stacks, we have the chatbots. Here's a beautiful thing. We say, okay, we as a company need a chatbot because we need to be able to have that, you know, that one-to-one engagement with our customer. So fine, we build this chatbot. And this chatbot is good for simple questions that need to be answered at 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock in the morning, you need a phone number. There's simple little yes, no things that can be programmed into a chatbot. Great. Those are wonderful. But the problem is once you get beyond those questions and a real human being needs to be involved. As companies, we're not sitting there going, okay, we need a chatbot that's already gathered all this information. It's already dealing with the customer. It says, would you like to talk to a real human being? Great. All that information already gets transferred over to a customer experience person. They already have your name. They already have your account number. They have everything up on the stage, what you've already talked to. And they say, hi, Bob. I see you've been talking to our chatbot about this. You seem to have questions that it can't answer you. How can I help you? Instead of, hi, who am I speaking to? Can I get your phone number? Can I get your account number? Hang on, wait till I bring this thing up. There's nothing that turns a customer off more than trying to use technology when technology can't work for you.
Yeah. I mean, if your customer experience tells your customer that you think they should be working for you, that they have to do the work, That's a bad customer experience. And it's revolting. It's the same when you have an issue with a shipping thing. And well, according to our, and they start using all the jargon internally. I have no idea what any of that means. I don't work for your company. I'm the customer. And if you've got customers who feel that way, it's time to take a step back and figure it out. But the tech really can be amazing if the qualitative as well as the quantitative data is gathered in a way that it truly engages what the needs of the customer are and knows its limitation, like you've just said. Another example, you call a company because you have a question about a single item on your bill, and you have to go through and hear your current balance is this, your last payment is this, and 5 minutes have passed as you're waiting. Now, if you have a question about that, hit 0 and you can talk to a person. And then you get what you just described. What's your name? What's your account number? What? You're like, I just went through all of that. At what point in time do you say to the person, can you help me without me having to repeat everything that I just said to a robot? It's exhausting.
Yeah. And what we need to realize is that every department is marketing and every department is sales. Every department is marketing and every department is sales because we all deal with the customer in one way, shape, or form. Whether the thing gets shipped out wrong or there's packaged improperly, or there's a defect in the product and it gets the customer anyway, how the accounting department deals with their accounting department, how the customer's experience department deals with this, how a manager gets on the phone and deals with the problem once it's elevated to that level. We're all in the process of dealing with our customers, and we need to have the training, the tech, the experience to be able to differentiate ourselves and be that company that customers want to sit there and go, oh my God, they care about us. They want to take care of us. I'm going to recommend this person to everybody I know. And there's so few companies like that.
Our goal of every go-to-market strategy, every engagement that we have starts with our core concept. We want to help your company, not your people, your company, which includes your people, everything that you do, so that every person your company touches will become a voracious advocate for your brand. So even if I've never spoken to an employee in your company, but I've seen your website, or I've seen your point of sale display, or I've seen your product, or whatever it is, saw a commercial, all of that would lead me as the customer to go, oh my God, these guys are great. I'm going to tell the world. And most marketing systems stop at the sale. You got the guy's money. Okay. No, we want the person to learn about us, study us, get excited about, buy, and then love what they bought and tell the world about it. That's part of telling the world. If you have a brand that is so strong that people wouldn't even think of looking at a competitor because they're so happy with what's there. I mean, imagine some of these companies, I hate using the big guys because they're such so cliche. There's a reason that people are in line around the Apple store for days ahead to get the new product that they've never even seen, touched, or tested with big money in their pocket to buy it because they're a voracious advocate. Go online, pick a brand like that, and go onto one of their pages, and just to see the experiment, go on there and say, I think that product sucks.
You are going to get trolled for days, weeks, months, and years.
Think of the pop stars that the kids follow.
Absolutely.
And you make a comment about one of them as being horrible.
Yeah.
And see how long it takes before you get letterbombed.
Yeah.
And I'm being sarcastic, but those are voracious advocates. Well, it works in the B2B space too.
It absolutely does.
When I was working with Avery Dennison in the Performance Tapes, who's a brilliant, well-advanced technologies, absolutely on the same level, in many cases, above and beyond the adhesive tech from 3M. And you would go talk to a buyer that's been a 3M buyer of the competitive product for years. You know what the buyer would say? They were programmed to say it. No buyer's ever been fired for buying from 3M.
Same thing for IBM. People say the same thing about IBM.
Yeah, we could look at the competition, but my job security, nobody's going to tell me that I made a mistake for buying 3M if I take the risk with yours. And it's that kind of training that it's incredible the impact when you consider everything that you do affects your brand.
And if you've got buyers that are conditioned that I need to buy 3M products, pick a product, doesn't really matter whether it's 3M or not, all of a sudden your price goes from X to X plus 15% or 20% or 30% because the market will pay it. Same thing with Apple, same thing with a lot of products where all of a sudden you stop being a commodity and you start being a brand worth loving. And when you're that brand worth loving, all of a sudden, it's not about price anymore. You're not fighting it out in the trenches over nickels and dimes.
In the steel drum industry, when we did the research for the company that I was involved with before it sold, all of the things that they thought were the reason that people did business with them were way, way down the list. When we went out and talked to their customers, why is it for 30 years you've been buying from these guys without fail and never strayed? It wasn't because of the quality of their drum. The quality was great. They made the best product in the market and they were known for it. But the real reason that these buyers were doing business with them was they never, never would pick up the phone and call and a person didn't answer the phone. And number two was when the buyer would screw up or there was a run on a product and they needed a special drum right away, they were customer friendly to be able to truly get them in the schedule right away and cover their need. And the competitors couldn't do that. That was the number two reason. And the third one was, and this is the fun one, sometimes we would get a defective drum. We would call them and within moments, we would have someone interested in making it right. And they would always, the competitor could take months to get a response on a defective product. So the entire reason people did business with them at a premium, at a higher price, was because the cost of doing business with the other was higher in the total cost of ownership and the cost of use, because when things went wrong, they weren't there. That became the branding.
And that's care and that's trust. And that is the biggest thing that I think is missing in marketing today. It's that full customer experience. It's that end-to-end. We know we're going to be taken care of. We know that this company, A, cares about us. They understand our business. They understand what's important to us. They understand that this is mission critical. This, not so much. But when they need to jump to the pump, when they need to take care of us, there's no shirking. There's no excuses. There's no hiding behind email. There's no phone tree or whatever. There's somebody that I can pick up a phone with and say, help. And that person is going to sit there and say, I don't know. Hang on a second. Let me check it out. Can I call you back in 10 minutes? And they do.
And when you call, the person who answers the phone speaks in the same dialect of the language that you speak.
Yes.
So that you can understand and communicate and not off a script.
Yeah. So all of that comes down to training. It comes down to purpose. It comes down to culture. These are the things that we work with companies with time and time again to be able to let companies understand it's the little things that matter. Never mind how much money you spend in the Wall Street Journal or LinkedIn ads or Facebook ads or all these type of ads that are out there in your social media marketing. People want to know you care. And those are the companies that are going to make it going forward.
And to know that, to build all of this that we absolutely agree on, first, you have to go back and understand and know who your customers are, the personas of the people you're dealing with, and then all the rest of it can build off of that. Otherwise, you're building a house with no foundation.
And know who your customers aren't. Who are the people I can't help?
Or the people you don't want to help.
Exactly. Andrew, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I'm going to put all your information in the show notes. People will be able to get in touch with you. The value that you add to the companies you work with is amazing. But I have one question for you. And I ask this to everybody as I let them go out the door. There we go. Get the pressure on. When you leave a meeting, when you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you and Fangled Tech when you're not in the room?
If we want to grow, Fangled Tech is the guys who can make it happen. We enable companies to really dig deep and change the way they do business in ways that just turn every touch they make into an advocate for their brand.
That's phenomenal. Andrew, thank you for being an amazing guest. Loved having it. Love our conversations, and we'll have more.
Absolutely. I had a great time. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?